بالله السميع العليم من الشيطان اللعين الرجيم. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. الحمد لله الذي هدانا لهذا وما كنا لنهتدي لولا أن هدانا الله فقد جاءت رسل ربنا بالحق. والصلاة والسلام على النبي الأمي العربي المكي المدني العبد المؤيد المصطفى الأمجد المحمود الأحمد أبي القاسم محمد. وعلى أهل بيته الطيبين الطاهرين المعصومين المظلومين الذين أذهب الله عنهم الرجس وطهرهم تطهيرا. اللهم صل. أما بعد، فقد قال أمير المؤمنين عليه السلام: واعلم أن الرعية طبقات لا يصلح بعضها إلا ببعض، ولا غنى ببعضها عن بعض، فمنها جنود الله. فالجنود بإذن الله حصون الرعية وزين الولاة وعز الدين وسبل الأمن. صلوات. Today we have a shorter time, and a part of this time we will all, inshallah, remember the sacrifice of our Imam on this tragic day. And pay our condolences to the Holy Prophet's family and our Imam of our time. And I also would like to read a few lines from the administrative guidelines given by our Imam to Malik Ashtar, by Imam Ali alayhi salatu wa salam to Malik Ashtar. Salawat. Before that, I would request all of you to come closer to the member, please. Bismillah. From that concept regarding serving the masses, the 95%, the 98% of the population, not the few 2-4% wealthy people. And that also draws our attention to the fact that, for example, sometimes we behave the same way. Because we have more resources, we demand more attention, we want to get more than what another person is getting. More attention even, it may not be money. We should know that we are equal to other people. Even if we own the whole world, doesn't make any difference. From that subject to the next one, about selecting advisors or counselors. The word actually is advisors better. Imam said in his letter, he said, never take counsel of a miser, for he will vitiate your power and frighten you of poverty. He will make you weak. Miserly people, they don't take chances. Any risk is involved, they pull out. For some of you who probably don't know what this document is about, I have to say this 1 minute, that we are studying this letter Imam Ali alayhi salam gave to Malik Ashtar, Malik al-Ashtar, who Imam had appointed as the governor of Egypt. So these administrative, what's one of the longest documents in the collection called Nahjul Balagha, and it is very useful for all people, especially those who are managing a place or running a government or trying to organize people. So the Islamic way of administration and management, you could learn from this document. So of course I will just read a few lines We have covered some small parts of it before, but there's way too much in this document to, you know, fit in these brief discussions. Then Imam said, "Worst of advisors is he who has served as an advisor to unjust rulers and shared their crimes." Sometimes we pick people who are smart, intelligent, but they have helped wrong people. They have been a part in some kind of conflict that harmed people or institutions or Islam. Such people who may look very smart and sharp are dangerous to keep around yourself. So never let men who have been companions of tyrants and shared their crimes be your counselors. You can get better men than these, men gifted with intelligence and foresight, but unpolluted by sin. Men who have never aided a tyrant in his tyranny or a criminal in his crime. Such men will never be a burden on you. Even among these who are intelligent and unpolluted by sin, you have to be even more cautious. Even among these, show preference to them who have a habitual regard for truth, however trying to you, the administrator, at times their truth may prove to be. People who honestly give you their opinion, what they see, not people who try to flatter you, you know, praise you unnecessarily. And not people who may be intelligent, right, seemingly unpolluted by sin, but they have no regard for truth. They don't know what is right and what is wrong. So they are on a personal level, they may look pious and even smart, but they don't have a sense of an insight into right and wrong, bigger issues of right and wrong. Keep close to you the upright and the God-fearing, and make clear to them that they are never to flatter you and never to give you credit for any good that you may not have done. For the tolerance of flattery and unhealthy praise stimulates pride in man and makes him arrogant. Do not treat good and bad alike. Some people treat everyone with the same respect. That is not acceptable. You can be nice to people, kind to people, but the same regard and admiration for everyone is not justice. Do not treat good and bad alike. That will deter the good from doing good, because he sees no difference between him and this other person, right? So it'll discourage him from doing the right things he's doing, and encourage the bad in their bad pursuits. Recompense everyone according to one's deserts. Never remember that mutual trust and good will benefit the ruler and the ruled, and bread only through benevolence, justice and service. So cultivate goodwill among the people, for their goodwill alone will save you from troubles. Don't think if you buy a few people, as they say, you know, they paid the right people. No, that doesn't, they are not going to help you. You must be good. You know, goodwill among the people is cultivated, that was discussed two nights ago, through good actions. Allah spreads praise among people. If you are kind to people, Allah spreads praise among the people. And if the majority of people understand, they regard you as a kind person, as a fair person, right? They will be on your side. However destructive the role of the few powerful people may be, whatever they do, they can't get away with, because they will be restrained by the power of the masses. Try always to learn something from the experience of the learned and wise, and frequently consult them in state matters, so that you might maintain the peace and goodwill which your predecessors had established in the land. Different classes of people. Remember that the people are composed of different classes. The progress of one is dependent on the progress of another. And none can afford to be independent of the other. So Imam is now telling you what classes there are in society. We have the army formed of the soldiers of God. We have our civil officers and their establishments, our judiciary, our revenue collectors, and our public relation officers. The general public itself consists of Muslims and Zimmis. Zimmis are non-Muslims who pay khiraj and jizya. They are taxes. Muslims pay other kind of taxes, non-Muslims pay other kind of. Non-Muslims do not pay zakat and khums. Muslims pay zakat and khums. So they are asked to pay, you know, jizya. The general public itself consists of Muslims and Zimmis, and among them of merchants and craftsmen, the unemployed and the indigent. God has prescribed for them their several rights, duties and obligations. They are all defined and preserved in the book of God and the traditions of His Prophet. The army, by the grace of God, is like a fortress to the people and lends dignity to the state. It upholds the prestige of the faith and maintains the peace of the country. Without it, the state cannot stand. In its turn, it cannot stand without the support of the state. Our soldiers have proved strong before the enemy because of the privilege God has given to them to fight for Him. For they have their material needs to fulfill and have therefore to depend upon the income provided for them from the state revenue. The military and the civil population who pay revenue both need the cooperation of others. So the military should work with the people who pay taxes, not impose their will upon the people, not rule the... Military should not be in power. Military is not the one running the show. Military is in service of people and should work alongside those people who are providing revenue to the state. The judiciary, civil officers and their establishment, also the army should work in cooperation with these other parts of the government. The Qazi administrators, judiciary, the chief justice, the judges of high courts, supreme court, other judges, and those working in the same judiciary, the Qazi administrators, civil and criminal law, the civil officers collect revenue. The civil officers collect revenue and attend to civil administration with the assistance of the establishment, and then there are tradesmen and merchants who add to the revenue of the state. It is they who run the market and are in a better position than others to discharge social obligations. Tradesmen, merchants, they are creative people. They are people who create or produce goods, and they are people who have resources. No. If the market cooperates with the government can operate. If the market is not cooperating with the government, it cannot function. And these are people who have the resources to help the society. Those are the highest tax-paying people. You know. So government should encourage business and all of that so that these people can work effectively and not do hoarding of goods, or for example charge people more than that, or you know, spread corruption in the market. There will be laws should be fair so that they can help the traders and business class to provide goods and services to the society. God has given appropriate opportunity of service to one and all, and then there are rights of all these classes over the administration, which the administrator has to meet with an eye for good and entire good of the entire population, a duty which he cannot fulfill properly unless he takes personal interest in its execution and seeks help from God. Then the army. Army is... The function of army is to do jihad. And jihad means protect the Islamic land, the Muslims, and also non-Muslims who are living under the, you know, within the bounds of the law, responsible, peaceful citizens of the state, army should protect all of these. But the main service of the army is towards Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. They are not like professional armies who are sent to invade any country to kill and do whatever they want to do. Rather, they are forces who sometimes may be obligated to help people in another part of the world, right? To free them from tyranny. So the concept of army in Islam is also a subject that is to be understood. Because Islam doesn't believe in nation states or geographical boundaries. And also that the army is not only the professional army. Sometimes people volunteer, without that kind of pay that the regular army has. And that is needed, like a reserve force, volunteer force. That is needed when, for example, the area, the Islamic lands come under attack. Or this internal threat to the security of the state. Right? So you need much more than a few thousand people. You need the whole population to be willing. Like Imam Khomeini Rizwanullah said, we need a 20 million strong army. And my understanding is Islamic Republic already has a 20 million strong army. Because every other person you meet is already trained, and after 8 years of war and then years of military service, which is either compulsory or people volunteer, the spirit of defense of Islam has been inculcated, instilled in the hearts and minds of children and youth in schools and colleges. They grow up to become soldiers of Islam, soldiers of Imam Akhir al-Zaman alayhi salatu wasalam. Salawat. Judge, chief judge. Select for your chief judge one from the people who is by far the best among them. One who is not obsessed with domestic worries. One who cannot be intimidated. One who does not err too often. One who does not turn back from the right path once he finds it. So they, whatever pressures they bring, upon the judge to make a wrong decision, he should not be intimidated. One who is not self-centered, one who will not decide before knowing full facts. Judge should never rush into decisions. Just because two witnesses stand in front and say, we saw this murder, this guy killing this person, that person, he shouldn't, be taken, carried away, get carried away and make hasty decisions. One who will weigh with care every attendant doubt and pronounce a clear verdict after taking everything into full consideration. One who will not grow restive over the arguments of advocates. For example, these advocates, lawyers and all, they keep arguing the case for, it may take weeks or months. He shouldn't become tired of this. Oh, this is enough. Let me just decide and finish this. No, he has to complete the process. One who will not grow restive over the arguments of advocates and who will examine with patience every new disclosure of fact and who will be strictly impartial in his decision. One whom flattery cannot mislead, or one who does not exult over his position. But it is not easy to find such men. After describing all this, Imam says, it's not easy to find such men. Where will you find a man like that? Once you have selected the right man for the office, pay him handsomely enough to let him live in comfort and in keeping with his position. Enough to keep him above temptations. No one can bribe him because he has so much money, he doesn't have to worry about it. No one can even dream of paying him, because he's above that, these things. Give him a position in your court so high that none can even dream of coveting him, and so high that neither backbiting nor intrigue can touch him. He should be a man of high caliber, morals and everything, strong, courageous person, bold, and patient. Wait till all arguments are done. So even after, for example, 6 months of deliberations, arguments, one new evidence comes 5 minutes before he was about to give his decision. He should not give up. So say, let us start all over again. Let us look at this. Because, you know, you cannot try anyone without being sure. You know, in cases of blood and in cases of irz, abru, you know, for example, issues related to morality, you know, and issues related to life. These are very serious issues in Islam. With slightest doubt, you cannot try the person, you cannot sentence him to death, or, you know, you have to wait till it's fully proven, established that this is it. Then the classes under the judge, the subordinate judiciary, beware, the utmost carefulness is to be exercised in this selection for it in this high office which adventurous self-seekers aspire to secure and exploit in their selfish interests. See, it's not enough to have the right person as judge. The whole system has to be corrected. Because what happens is the case won't even go up. The judge will never even know was there ever a case like that. You know? So the whole system which is corrupt has to be corrected. People of similar qualities have to be placed in those sensitive positions. Revenue collection, Imam speaks about that. And then you have clerical establishment, trade and industry, and the poor people. Trade industry, just a few lines from this. These are just glimpses so that you all can go back and read it even more. With some, you know, some more discussion, understand the administrative system of Islam. So we went into this logical order. We first looked at other political systems. Then last night we looked at the Islamic system briefly, try to understand what are the basis of Islamic government. And then we said, okay, once Islamic government is established, then how did that government function inside? And what are the relations of different parts of the government and different parts of society? Imam is concerned about the tradesmen and industry and businesses. Adopt useful schemes placed before for those engaged in trade and industry and help them with wise counsels. Some of them live in towns and some move from place to place with their ware and tools and earn their living by manual labor. Trade and industry are sources of profit to the state. While the general public is not inclined to bear the strain, those engaged in these professions take the trouble to collect commodities from far and wide, far and near, from land and across the seas, from mountains and forests, and naturally derive benefits. Of course, when you work so hard to, you know, send your goods overseas and then buy stuff, this, no, not everyone has that kind of talent to engage in such a hard work, such, you know, take such bold risks. But of course, when they do that, they get big profits. It is this class of peace-loving people from whom, of course, Imam is not generalizing, all business people are like that. He's saying, it is this class of peace-loving people from whom no disturbance must need be feared. They love peace and order. Indeed, they are incapable of creating disorder because they are making money, they are doing business. They're not like violent people as violent, you know. But Imam is warning. Visit every part of the country and establish personal contact with this class and inquire into their conditions. But bear in mind that a good many of them are intensely greedy. Merchants, business class, and are inured to bad dealings. They hoard grain and try to sell it at a high price. And this is most harmful to the public. It is a blot on the name of the ruler not to fight this evil. Prevent them from hoarding. For the Prophet of God, peace be upon him, had prohibited it. And see to it that trade is carried on with the utmost ease. Government should not make rules that make it hard for business people to engage into business, you know. And see to it that trade is carried on with the utmost ease, that the scales are evenly held, and that prices are so fixed that neither the seller nor the buyer is put to a loss. And if in spite of your warning, should anyone go against your commands and commit the crime of hoarding, then deal with him appropriately with severe punishment. So on one side, he praises this community of businessmen, businesswomen, whatever. And on the other side, he's giving such big warnings that this class can cause hardships for poor people because of hoarding, because of setting the prices high, because of all of these other issues. And you see that right now, all this, we are in the society, we are in, they say, the media is saying all the time, we are in recession and all that, right? If I ask you all, how many of you are out of job right now? Can you raise your hand? Out of job. Children are out of job. Well, anyone out of job? You, one, two, three, one. Well, children are raising their hands. What's going on? Yes? Any out of job this side? So they are saying is unemployment is high. I see just three hands in this whole room. This is recession. Don't spend a lot of money. Save money. You know, all of that. Then what is it really? If, for example, 7% unemployment, 8% unemployment, right? So 95% are at work. 92% people are working, right? Then why is everyone buying at Walmart? Fear. Media creates this fear. Even those who are at work, they should live comfortably, right? So it's not fair. The system, this all is psychologically, you know, hyped kind of situation. It's not really that bad. Other parts of the world, people live happily with not even half of what we have. Expectations have become too much. So that people think that, you know, if for example the AC doesn't work, you are devastated or something. For example, this one little thing goes wrong, life is hell. This is fire. What is this thing? But they create this. People will think all the time recession, all the time this fear. But that doesn't mean people become wasteful and extravagant and, you know, and have everyone becoming greedy and all that. No, it means that live in a way that is comfortable but fair to other people as well. So be helpful to other people, classes, people who are making money with hard work. They deserve to have a comfortable life, but at the same time, they should care about people who are lower in terms of economic, you know, situation, position in the society. These are all these complex issues. And Imam al-Islam is balancing so many things. And he wrote this 14 centuries ago. But you will still see that the guidelines apply to our times very well. And it is not being in touch with these guidelines that we have confusion in the society. If these basics were clear, right, then all these other complex issues they teach in colleges and they work in these, try to make these plans and all, if these bases are okay, then the plans will be made accordingly. Otherwise, sometimes you have a very well researched and everything, but the bases are not clear. The basis, the moral issues, you know, the being fair, justice. For example, one organization wants to create a huge plan, project, everything, right? The plan looks very good, but it's hurting the people. But it is earning profits for these few people. So everything has to be done in a way that people, for one reason or another, who do not have either the means or the knowledge or the skills to do that big business, you know, they are not put in the, you know, in a bad shape. They should not be hurt. Just because some people have more knowledge and skills, they should not hurt the people just because they didn't go to the right college. You know, this is not fair. So today, on one side, we see a lot of emphasis on professionalism, specialization, but on the other hand, you see that knowledge becomes source of arrogance, pride, greed, and people become hurtful in ways that they don't even realize. Just as racism is something people don't realize that they are racist. Just, for example, you ignore the person in ways that you don't know that you are ignoring. He notices, she notices that she's being ignored because of the color of his skin or her skin or the manner of dressing up, language, way of speaking, something. But we are not inclusive, we are not reaching out. This is racism. Automatically leaving someone out, not dealing fairly, equally with people, this is... So there's so many issues. When we are dealing with society and community, we have to be conscious of so many things. So this was just for Tabarruk, that on this day that we come to commemorate Ashura, we take some glimpses, some noor and some light from these beautiful teachings and guidelines of our Imam, so that we are not just doing a ritual. We are trying to apply these principles in our times, which so many people are telling us that religion is a matter of the past. Religion doesn't work today, is not applicable. Religion is abstract. Religion is this and that. Is about morals. It's about few little advice. Religion is a system, as far as Islam is concerned. Especially the Islam of Imam Ali alayhi salatu wasalam. Salawat. Because you have a perfect example, 5 years of his Khilafat, right? So 25 years after the death of the Prophet, Imam comes to power, not through a coup d'etat. People came and asked him, gave him support, Imam came to power. And he revived the system that the Holy Prophet was establishing in his time, which was getting lost because there was prohibition on hadith, on recording of prophetic traditions. For 25 years, people were persecuted for giving or reporting a saying of the Prophet or a fact about his life if it was not in the service of those who were in power. So 25 years, one generation, everything was lost. People didn't know basic rules about marriage and talaq, didn't know basic things about hajj. Almost everything was lost. So starting from those issues, all the way up to the system that should protect this deen. Without a system, you cannot protect deen. Religion cannot be protected if you don't have power. So if you have power in your hand, then you can be sure that no one can mess with the Islamic values. No one can misinterpret, create confusion in the minds of people, or remove things that people should learn about from public knowledge. That happens a lot. You tell half truth, it's a lie. So unless you have power and people who have deep knowledge of Islam, you cannot monitor so many things that can go wrong. So many things can go wrong unless you really have people who have deep insight into religion and have this system of administration that doesn't have all these loose ends. It has taking care of all these different aspects of the society. You cannot protect Islam or people or even yourself. What one person cannot do it. So it's all of that comes together. We should thank Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala for such great teachings that we have. We should appreciate these things. We should open these books. We should be in contact with these things. We should think, we should know that our scholars, they are a source, they are a channel through which you can get to those words of wisdom. Our scholars are humbly doing their service so that you will be connected to your maraji and special knowledge, people who have specialized in these sciences, right? And the good thing about the life, about the age we are living in right now, is that a lot of this knowledge has actually been put in practice. The Islamic government established, right? The Islamic teachings about foreign policy, trade, all of these. It's much more work has been done on these issues than I can, you know, that I would be aware of. I am just in this, on the surface, I'm just talking, and I don't know that deep because I'm not into administration of a state. So you will see that mujtahideen, senior ulama, and professionals from other fields, they have come together and created the right kind of think tanks and you know, special the groups that do the research, and they, on the basis of Islamic values and Islamic laws, they create the banking system, the systems for you know, protecting Islamic interests, in short, safeguarding Islamic interests, and which is the responsibility of every single individual in the society, not just the state. Safeguarding Islamic interests is the duty of each one of us. Safeguarding Islam, that's social and political responsibility, and that was the responsibility for which Sayyidul Shuhada alayhi salam stood up. Because he said he saw people are not doing that responsibility. They are not working, they are not doing anything to safeguard Islam, Islamic society, Islamic values. It is being corrupted from top, from the government, and it is being influenced by outsiders, you know. And the ulama are not speaking out. People in other fields of life, they are not saying anything. Everyone is, you know, either totally ignorant people because of ignorance or because of greed. They are not doing their duties. Imam reprimanded the ulama, the professionals, all classes of people. This Malik Esther, this Ahadnama is also a kind of, you know, a warning that all of these things, one of these goes wrong, everything is lost. One of these goes wrong. If army is not taken care of, judiciary, or business, or any of those things, imagine how much had gone wrong without Imam being in power. And what happened after Imam's Shahadat? And what happened when Sayyidul Shuhada stood up, what Yazid was doing, it was monopoly of power. It was just one man show. It was just, he was doing whatever he wanted to do for himself. And Islam does not allow those systems of government. Islam doesn't allow this kind of one-man rule, monopoly of power. It's rather, it's something that has two sides to it. One is Allah appoints right, just people, and then people give support and are involved in the system to make things better, improve the lives of the people, create their infrastructure, collect revenues, people pay their taxes, you know, and defend the state. Defend Islam, not state as a nation state, defend Islam. And that is not just the army, all of us have to defend Islam. Defense of Islam requires vigilance, requires awareness, knowledge, unity between the people, goodwill among the people, that they trust each other, they provide support to each other. And imagine if all of that would happen in a community or in a society, how much can be done? How much good work can be done? In fact, one would say with surety that you can bring the zuhur of Hazrat Imam Mahdi alayhi salam close. Allahumma salam. Brothers, can you come please closer to the member? Ya Allah. All those on the back side, can you please walk up here? Closer. Salawat. Allahumma salam. Ashura is from Ashara. Ashara means 10th. 10th of Muharram. The day of Ashura is the day when from the morning all the way till the afternoon, Imam Hussein alayhi salam's small army was coming out one by one, each person's, and speaking, reciting poetry, giving speeches. So there's a lot of information, a lot of literature about how that one day passed. It didn't just happen in an hour. Imam had a strategy for fighting that war. He appointed people for special tasks. And each person went out, fought very bravely. An army was, the enemy was finding it very hard to finish, to defeat Imam Hussein's men. And even Sayyid al-Shuhada, after giving all that sacrifice, when he was alone, he came out, he looked at the bodies of Shuhada. And he looked at the battlefield. And then he said, now you see the battle of the one who has lost his son. Now you see the battle of the person who has given his friends, his cousins, his brothers. Now you see the battle of the one who has been thirsty for days. Imam fought very bravely. Sayyid ibn Tawus, alallah maqamahu, in Luhuf, he says, the Imam alayhi salam, he attacked the army of 30,000 people. They were running all over the place, scared and fighting, scared and fleeing, trying to save their lives. It's like a herd of sheep runs away when someone attacks, you know. A lion attacks or some, that kind of situation was created. Imam alayhi salam would fight and then come back to the center. And so that the family would know Imam is still there. Imam, when he would strike the enemy, he would sometimes look at the river Furat. On the side of river Furat where Abbas alayhi salam was there. And would say, Abbas, look at the battle of your brother. And they would sometimes turn towards the camp where the body of Akbar had been brought. So Akbar, look at how I fight, you know. And the whole army would watch Imam alayhi salam in his courage, in his strength of his faith, as if he had not lost anything. The strength he was getting from Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. But humanly he had given so much. As a person, he had given his dearest ones. And he had so much concern about his family. There at one point, the enemy came between Imam and the camp. When Imam noticed that some of these soldiers are advancing towards the camp, Imam al-Islam raised his voice. Say, oh people, if you do not believe in Akhirat, if you do not believe in Akhirat, at least live as free men. Shim returned towards Imam al-Islam. What are you saying, O son of Fatima? Imam said, I am the one fighting with you. My family, these children and women have no fault. You cannot harm them. So they listened to Imam's, you know, wise advice. And they came back, they said, come on, let's fight and finish him off. But Imam alayhi salam was not a person that could easily be finished. It was a while Imam alayhi salam was fighting in the field. It took a long time. Even narrators and historians write, Imam got to the river again. And then someone raised the voice that the army is approaching the camp. Imam alayhi salam, for his concern for his family, he came out of the river back to where he was. But as he was fighting, more and more arrows were getting into his body. His body was now all arrows around him, but it was all arrows in the front of his body, as Shaykh Abbas al-Khumi writes. There were more than 300 wounds on his body. And all of these were on the front side. He never turned his back on the enemy. And then someone struck him with a rock on his head. Then some of them came and they were throwing at him whatever they could find. Stones, arrows, spears, swords, whatever they could find, they were throwing at Sayyid al-Shuhada. He was getting injured and wounded. That was after he gave his final farewell, his final goodbye to his family. Ya Zainabu, Ya Umm Kulsoom. O Sakina, O Zainab, O Umm Kulsoom. Zainab heard this voice, she came out. Brother, why are you saying these words? Sayyid al-Shuhada says, Zainab, this is my time. I am leaving now. I will not come back. Sayyidina said, wait, my brother. Come inside. Sayyidina Shuhada came inside the tent. And Zainab Salamullah Alayha, she came to Sayyidina Shuhada and kissed him over here under his chin, on his neck. Imam asked, what happened, sister? Why? She said, I remember my mother telling me that Hussein will be, his head will be cut in Karbala. The Imam said, Zainab, come close to me. And Imam alayhi salam kissed the arms, the shoulders of Zainab. And she asked her brother, why do you do that? And he said, because my mother told me that you will be taken as a captive from Karbala to Kufa and from Kufa to Sham. Then Imam alayhi salam asked for that shirt that his mother had made specially for him. When he asked for that, Zainab salamullah alayha screamed and she cried loudly because she realized this is the time, because the mother had said to her, the Zainab bin Hussein asked for this shirt, be sure that he is leaving and he will not come back. Imam alayhi salam left that tent. He came out. His final goodbye to all his family and everyone. And he fought. He was so injured. As he was saying his goodbye to his son, Sayyid Sajjad, he saw the condition of his father in blood and all the dust on his body. It was hard to even recognize it is his father. So he asked him, Father, where is Abbas? Where is Ali Akbar? Where is my brother? Where are all the other people? Imam said, they were all gone. They have all gone. They have all become shaheed. It is just you and me now, my son. Sayyidu Shuhada asked for an asa, for a stick, so that he would rest on it and stand up. He said, give me a sword so that I can help my father fight. Sayyidu Shuhada says, no, Sayyidu Sajjad, this is not your time. You must wait. You are responsible for the women and for the children. You are my next Imam. Imam alayhi salam gave him the amanat and mawaris of Nabuwat, of Anbiya and Awliya, so that he was the next Imam. And then he left the tent, the Khiyam, and he went out to fight. But he became so severely injured. He was hit by spears and arrows in his throat, in his chest, and on his back someone hit him with a spear. Finally Imam alayhi salam came down from the horse. Our ulama believes that Bibi Sayyida Salamullah alayha, the mother of Imam, was waiting for her son to fall. She was the one who took him in her arms. Imam alayhi salam was sitting, bleeding, when Abdullah ibn Hassan, this boy, came out of the camp. He saw Shimr coming close to Imam alayhi salam, about to kill the Imam. He said, no, you will not hurt my uncle. Shimr, when he struck his sword, he cut the arm of this little boy. Imam alayhi salam said, have patience, my dear. You will be with my grandfather very soon. Hormullah hit him with an arrow and slit his throat. This little boy died in his uncle's arms. Imam alayhi salatu wassalam, he's severely injured. Now he's going into sajda. Ilahi ridan bi qadaik, tasliman li amrik, la ma'buda siwak, ya ghiyas al mustaghisin. There is no Lord except you, O Allah. You are the one who helps people in distress. This is Hussein in his last sajda. Now willing to give his life and everything he had. Janab Zainab hears Imam's voice. She comes out of the tent. She comes and stands and says, Ya Umar ibn Sa'd, O Umar ibn Sa'd, will you watch Sayyidu Shuhada die like this? And you will do nothing to save him. Umar ibn Sa'd turned his back to hide his face. Then Zainab saw Shimr sitting on the chest of Imam alayhi salam, just about to slit the throat of Imam alayhi salam. She said, oh Shimr, wait, Sakina is waiting for her father. Do not kill him. Sakina loves Hussein and Hussein loves Sakina very much. Let her come. Let her come and see him for one last time. But before anything could be done, they heard the voice, Allah Zubih al-Husayn o Karbala, Allah Qutil al-Husayn o Karbala. The head of this prince of Jannat was raised on the spear and was being run, taken all over the place, and the people saw, and Zuljana came back towards the camp. Allah Zalima ta Zalima. The crime has been committed against the family of Prophet. Hussein has been killed. Al-Zalima. It's a crime. It's injustice. This is a crime. So the soldiers of Ibn Sa'd, they came together and they tried to catch this horse. Ibn Sa'd said, this is the horse of Prophet. Don't hurt him. There was someone to speak for Zuljana, but there was no one to say, this is Hussein. This is grandson of Prophet. Don't hurt him. Ala la'natullah ala al-qawm al-zalimeen. وَسَيَعْلَمُ الَّذِينَ ظَلَمُوا أَيَّ مُنْقَلَبٍ يَنْقَلِبُونَ. O Allah, forgive our sins. O Allah, guide us to the path of our Imam. O Allah, give us tawfiq of ziyarat of Karbala. Barilaha, remove darkness from our hearts. O Allah, guide us so that we can establish the Islamic values in our lives. Brothers and sisters, we'll have a short noha right now about Bibi Sakina. Please join us. Ya Hussein. Yeah.